So if we just take these two practices, that of divine vision, seeing God as the reality wherever you look, and holding his hand throughout the day, committing yourself to his care when asleep, then that love, which is your reality, will grow and expand and will fully realize itself. And then that love will come from the inside to the outside, and that will change your whole life. That's the way to approach the uncovering of the inner love for God, that inside beauty and purity and energy which is going to change the outside. That's the way to start. It is a perfectly practical way. That way we can implement Baba's teachings. There is no reason we cannot do it. Nobody sees us do it. When we approach somebody and we pass that person saluting God, who is the reality of that person, they do not know it. They cannot point a finger at us saying, look at that crazy person. Or when we are walking in the street or sitting in the office holding God's hand, nobody can see us doing this. They can't say, hey, this person cannot work for us. He's not all there. It is all inside, all in your heart. Therefore, there is no reason for anyone to say it cannot be done. It can be done. Every person here has freedom, God realization within his or her grasp. Every person here has immortality next door to him, by his side, within him, above him. We should never lose sight of this fact. Of all the millions, all the billions of people in the world, how many know Sri Satya Sai Baba? How many go to India to see Sai? How many read his books and consider his teachings? How many look for him in their hearts and feel love for him, devotion to him, and feel his love for them? Of all the millions in the world, it is just a handful. To let that great chance go because of lack of thought, because of lack of consideration, is really and truly a crime. So many times we are born, so much suffering we have gone through, so much desperation we have felt. The chance is here for us to be free of the quicksand, to reach the firm bank, to realize the divinity which Baba says is our true nature, to feel and be that which never changes, which is always the same, that bliss that passes all understanding, that peace that passes all understanding, that is within the grasp of every one of us. Any day, any moment we forget is a day lost, a moment lost. How quickly our life passes away, how rapidly the years go by. In no time at all, it's all over. We are too old to pay attention, and the opportunity is lost. When and where to come again? Every life is taken on to work out a certain load of karma. The next life, who knows what karma will come into play? Who knows what our circumstances will be, where we will be? This opportunity, so tangible, so precious, once lost may be gone for so long, eons of time. Every day we should remind ourselves of our heritage, of our opportunity, of the meaning of our life right now, and pray to Baba, pray to the Lord, to help us realize that. The final chapter is entitled, To Sum It Up. Baba has told us that as long as the ego mind is the charioteer of our lives, we'll never be able to know the changeless truth, and that until we know the truth of ourselves, we will continue with birth, death, rebirth, temporary joys, and inevitable suffering. Mind, ego, concepts, reactions, and tendencies must be perceived and acknowledged as that which is experienced, but which is not oneself. In order to know the full and real truth about oneself, one need to make this inquiry the dominant interest of one's life. Not that we must make such a decision until we choose to do so. An eternity of what we are experiencing now and have experienced in the past is ours, if such be our choice. Baba has clearly told us that birth, death, and rebirth is a game of our own choosing. But if we have enjoyed our game enough and now yearn for the realization of that peace which passeth all understanding, then Baba offers to help us awaken. We are told by Baba that a divine incarnation is an extraordinary circumstance beyond the possibility of verbal description. He tells us that the time is ripe for us to realize the absolute goal of life, reunion with Godhead, and that it will be a major tragedy for us if we waste this unique lifetime in the pursuit of worldly desires, worldly ambitions, and sensory enjoyments. This challenge may awaken us from the ordinary daily life, and we may resolve, I will search for my truth. Here we need to be alert and understand what I search for my truth means in this context. The everyday meaning will be that I am an individual person positioned in time and space. The truth can be found and recognized and is mine, yet somehow my truth is apart from me and thus requires search. Baba assures us that what I search for my truth really means is that my truth is myself and not something separate from me. The search is to see clearly wrong notions and discard them, and that I is the undifferentiated supreme absolute divinity, which only appears to be limited to individuality in somewhat the same context as bubbles on the leading edge of an ocean wave appear to be separate, but in fact are neither separate from the ocean nor different from the ocean. In terms of daily life, this means that the finality of everything is one and the same divinity, that we appear to be apart from the divine, but are not actually so. Saints and sages from the most ancient of times have told us that the path to the realization of our divine reality is that of detachment from the objects and affairs which we are presently attached to because of desire and craving and misconceptions. And Baba teaches us that this detachment will come about when we examine objects and affairs closely so as to clearly perceive their deficiencies. We have experiences such as joy, boredom, or agony as a result of contact with worldly objects. But relationships between ourselves and objects are changeable, temporary, not reliable. Experiences of boredom and agony are temporary, and that is all to the good, no doubt. But conversely, we cling tenaciously to the experience of joy, and we easily become attached to objects which provide a range of pleasant experiences. However, all objects, even one's beloved spouse or child, come into existence, stay for a while, change much or little, and then are no more. The promise of bliss, which we perceived in the object, is aborted by its inherent seeds of decay, and one's hope of lasting joy in these relationships is betrayed time and time again. This happens to everyone, and this is the principal deficiency of an object. Yet we ignore repeated lessons and continue to seek worldly objects, hoping to experience happiness thereby. Baba teaches that a search to find happiness in something perceived outside ourselves is bound to fail. He tells us that only when one realizes oneself is there happiness. Limitless, unqualified bliss is our natural self, our reality. Being, consciousness, bliss is our name, but that name is good only for communication. Our true reality is beyond words. Baba teaches that our reality is perfect love, divine love, and that bliss is love. He tells us that our task as pilgrims on the spiritual path is to purify mind and heart, for only a pure mind and heart can reflect the immaculate truth which is beyond the opposites. Baba informs us that all truth will instantly flash into a purified heart. Since the omnipresent consciousness, the divine principle, is the reality of both mind and heart, it cannot be difficult to realize the inherent purity of mind and heart. Baba tells us that in this time and age wherein we encounter imperfection wherever we turn, the most effective means to get rid of the impurities which now crowd mind and heart is to directly call upon the ever-present divine principle, one's innermost reality. The way is simple and immediately available to every person. The way is to fill the mind with that particular name of divinity which is dear to one's heart, and fill the heart with devotion to the divine. It is the experience of people that in the presence of the divine name, one's manifold impurities weaken and fall away without struggle and without the application of any other type of discipline. Sri Satya Sai Baba declares that consciousness is omnipresent. Omnipresent means everywhere at every moment. Omnipresence of consciousness means that one's consciousness is the consciousness of everything in creation. It means that consciousness is present in everything in creation, regardless of how the object or the expression of life might be classified on our scale of values. The same omnipresent consciousness is in God, in the most distant universe, in the block of granite, in you, in me. Apparent differences are those of name, form, and function, and of the density of the cloud of ignorance which obscures the brilliant light of consciousness. Here, the word ignorance is used to indicate an uncritical acceptance of separateness of duality. We can easily understand how ignorance hides the omnipresence of consciousness by noticing how we ourselves feel that we are separate, and how we do not seem to demonstrate the love and the glory of our essential reality, divinity. Baba declares that consciousness is the Lord, and in reality, God alone exists. Baba likens consciousness to an electric current, a phenomenon with the knowledge of everyone. The diverse expressions of electricity multiply year by year as technology advances, but it is all one aspect of energy, electricity. The ignorance of which Baba speaks arises because in life we see the diversity, the duality, but fail to appreciate the unity. With simple instruction and easy, simple experiments, our ignorance about electricity is easily lifted and done away with. But it is not so easy for us to see that a person of ugly behavior, the worm found in freshly turned earth, our beloved Baba, and the countless thousands of millions of universes in space are all part of the one omnipresent consciousness. And it is perhaps even more difficult to see that we must be helped in order to be free of ignorance, even though no one but oneself is responsible for continued ignorance. To understand how we may be helped to free ourselves of ignorance, it is best to take a simple but true example. A simple example, evident to all of us, is the ocean and the shore. Ocean is commonly understood as the vast body of water which surrounds the continents. The ocean is one vast ocean. The names Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean do not alter the fact that it is one vast ocean. This we know. We learned it in school and later on directly experienced the fact that we travel around the world. Yet, at the shore, we see separate waves and so name them. We see separate foam and bubbles and so name them. When the wave rises to a crest and breaks upon the shore, we actually see these phenomena, and the phenomena are real and tangible. When we venture into the waves, the foam and the bubbles, we know that waves, foam, and bubbles are just ocean, but we see and experience wave, foam, and bubbles, and we respond to the experience in that context. A child, fascinated with the bubbles, may capture some in his hand and may say to his father, "I will take them home." Father smiles and explains that bubbles are transitory forms of ocean water which appear to be real but quickly die away. This perfectly obvious fact had never occurred to the child, but it was at once understood when pointed out by his father, who had a correct understanding of both the apparent duality and the underlying reality. In this case, Father was the guru. That which calls our attention to truth is the guru. Unless something occurs to remind us of ignored truth, we would remain as we are. We would continue to engage in actions arising from false notions and suffer the painful consequences again and again ad infinitum. That this unhappy situation can exist is widely understood. The common statement is, "He who fails to understand history is bound to repeat it. Blessed is he who has been found by a true guru." To a devotee, the teachings of Baba is the enlightenment loving offered by a true guru. We perceive duality at the seashore. However, that perception of difference, of duality, is harmless because the phenomenon of duality arises and subsides so rapidly that our basic understanding of the ocean is not affected. But the great body of our experience is not so simple and direct. At the shore, the appearance of duality, waves, foam, and bubbles, quickly and plainly subsides into the ever-present underlying unity of ocean. In more complex experiences, the appearance of duality persists, and we do not see or understand the omnipresent unity of the omnipresent consciousness. Thus we disregard the unity, focus on the appearance as something unique and real in itself, and thus fall victim to wrong notions. The experience of physical, emotional, and mental phenomena is indeed real in relation to the senses. But such phenomena is unreal, for that which appears and then disappears, dependent upon this or that, which neither lasts nor can be relied on, is as good as unreal. For this reason, the world is said to be neither real nor unreal. In the simple experience of the ocean and the shore, we see clearly the duality of appearance, and we also understand the underlying unity of the ocean. The ocean is its waves and its bubbles, and the waves are not the ocean, for the ocean remains as the ocean, even when bubbles and waves have lost their separate forms and no longer exist. But in the more complex experiences of our life, we do not clearly understand the duality of the world of appearances and of ourselves, nor clearly understand the unity of the underlying omnipresent consciousness, the divine principle. That divine principle, the omnipresent underlying consciousness, is oneself and is also everything else that can be imagined or perceived, just as the ocean is its visible waves and bubbles and also its invisible variations in temperature and currents. But neither the world nor oneself, this apparent duality, limits the divine principle. For the omnipresent consciousness remains as omnipresent consciousness even when I as a person have lost my separate form and no longer exist. In this fashion, we are told that if the entire creation were to subside, the divine principle would remain without modification. In the illustration of the ocean and the shore, the child understood that he could not take the ocean bubbles home. He gained correct understanding when his father pointed to the truth of the situation. If the child willfully decided to ignore correct understanding and tried to carry the ocean bubbles home, no harm was done. But to apply such willfulness to more serious matters is to invite disaster. If, even though we have been fortunate to have been found by a true guru, we willfully disregard correct understanding, our actions will be based on wrong understanding, and we will continue to invite the misery and suffering which follows serious errors of judgment. Sri Satya Sai Baba tells us again and again in his discourses, writings, and conversations that God alone exists and that he and we are not different. Baba points out in the clearest of terms that the duality of oneself and the world is an illusion, that duality is transitory appearance only, and that the entire creation of an infinite number of universes and an infinite number of beings of manifold types and forms resolve into the one reality God, the omnipresent consciousness, the divine principle. Baba has pointed out this truth to those whom he has found, which means those who will listen. Having listened and having reasoned out this truth in simple situations, which we can easily comprehend, we are bound by our intelligence to no longer be unknowingly subject to illusion in respect to duality. The understanding of duality and unity means that no matter what we perceive, no matter how tangible or intangible it might appear to be, we penetrate it with our understanding and know that whatever we perceive is divinity at its core, and we ourselves are not truly different from what we perceive, from each other, from the world, or from the divine. The understanding of duality and unity will transform our lives if we do not allow a host of predetermined concepts to hold us as prisoners. From the day of our understanding, we can surely know and feel the joyful presence of the Lord as the one reality everywhere and be happy. Baba says to us always, Be happy, be happy. He says that in ourselves, the stream of happiness should be as constant as the stream of consciousness. Realization of unity, realization that nothing is apart from omnipresent consciousness, requires us to face a practical problem. This problem could be named the problem of identity or the problem of sanctuary. Ordinarily, regardless of what one's intellectual or philosophical understanding may be, one considers his body to be himself. But when one's intelligence has come to understand and appreciate the omnipresent nature of consciousness, the burning question arises, who and or what am I? In consciousness I am unity, but as an embodiment engaged in actions, I am duality. Therefore, one asks, as long as I am in action, and therefore subject to the swings of the opposites, where can I position my sense of being, of existing? One's native intelligence, once it is applied to the question, can quickly see that while I am everything, yet everything is not myself, for I continue unmodified regardless of what happens. For example, I am my body, which is the sum of its parts, but if an arm and a leg are destroyed, I continues undiminished, even though my body is diminished by the loss of some parts. The alert intelligence can at once pursue this clue quickly and realize that one can take one's stand as a witness to all that happens at any level of consciousness and remain unaffected by all happenings. At this level of purity, a guru will certainly appear. The guru may point out that if one wishes to realize the essence of his being and take his stand there, then the idea that the witness state is oneself is not substantially different from the idea that the embodied state is oneself, even though having taken one's stand in the witness state, there is no longer identification with the miseries and pleasures which afflict the body. The guru may point out that all ideas can be relinquished, even the idea of self, and that in reality one's essence is pure consciousness, not limited by a center or a periphery or ideas of any sort whatsoever. If, when listening to the guru, all ideas give up the ghost, so to speak, and are destroyed, then the mind is totally void of movement, and liberation is said to be achieved. The pilgrim is said to be no more. Long, long ago, the pilgrim became the idea, I am a spiritual aspirant, and I will take to the spiritual path. Now all ideas are extinguished, and the pilgrim has ceased to be. Consciousness is merged in consciousness, and being awareness bliss, love, is timeless, ever fresh, and ever fragrant reality. In this way, understanding cannot but begin to deepen somewhat when one takes the first step advised by Baba. Quote, see the deficiencies of objects, end quote. Now, when one has realized that unity and duality are coincident in the experience of one's embodiment as a human person, one is required by his native intelligence to engage in a constant self-effort of self-inquiry. The teachings of Baba, as briefly described in the second section of this book, are all to be found in his discourses, essays, and conversations. The writer has simply reported on his study of Baba for the last 17 years. The writer views Baba as a flame of love and bliss, dancing in ecstasy against the background of the apparent world and making himself accessible to all devotees who yearn for enlightenment. Baba is viewed as incarnate wisdom, as a particular embodiment of the omnipresent consciousness without the shade of peculiarity, fully aware of himself as you, as me, and as the total of creation. The writer's viewpoint reflects his experiences with Baba over the years, and he fully acknowledges his human capacity to misinterpret experience. The foregoing is the bias of mind which the writer spoke of in the chapter from age 16. and which the reader is entitled to know as he or she works through the pages of this book. The writer has implicit faith in Baba, and in his motives, and in the company of thousands of fellow devotees, he applies Baba's teachings to daily life as best he can. Almost every teaching of Baba's can be found couched in different words and phrases in the course of a diligent study of the several great spiritual and religious traditions of mankind. Such studies have been published and are available in libraries and from publishers. What is unique about the avatar, Sri Satya Sai Baba, is that Baba is alive, vigorous, able to be seen and listened to, and competent to put into words the truth about man, God, and the world, all of which he directly observes as he speaks. We attend the avatar not for more information, but for actual experience of our essential truth. Undistorted truth is Baba's nature. He is that truth, that is, the divine. The significance of this for us is beyond and superior to all calculations, for it brings into our life an infinitely powerful potential. That potential is the removal of the illusion of our separateness from the divine by experiencing our direct connection with the divinity of the sentient, alive in this world, Sri Satya Sai Baba. He tells us that salvation, abidance in the actuality of our divine reality, is here, as close to us as self is to self. He tells us that the avatar is with us, incarnate for the very purpose of our salvation, our liberation, our enlightenment. How different is this from the books we consult and the lectures we hear? How different from this is the love of the incarnate divinity for his children? The avatar, Sri Satya Sai Baba, whose actual beingness is truth, absolute, tells us that the direct pathway to God realization, to the realization of ourself, is love, that he is love, and that love unites us with him. He tells us to let love come first, and the direct realization of our truth will inevitably follow. How to open one's mind and heart to love for God, to devotion to him, and to the liberating truth of divinity now, in this very lifetime, is set forth in Baba's teachings, to be followed up by practice and by visiting Prashanti Nilayam, so as to place oneself in the direct physical presence of the avatar. For most of us, Baba as our divine charioteer becomes meaningful when we have had the joyful experience of his physical presence. For me, a pilgrim on the spiritual path who yearns to break free from illusion and delusion, Baba is the key to freedom. I have total confidence that what he says is the truth. What Baba teaches, I put into daily practice, and what he says does happen. For instance, while I was still a standard, general issue Western man, yet my dominant, aggressive, and hostile tendencies have fallen away without my struggling to change them. Baba informs us that bad characteristics cannot survive in the presence of the sacred name of that embodiment of divinity dearest to one's heart. He tells us that when the sacred name is said with devotion to the supreme value, divinity, even the powerful ego of voracious individuality will retreat from its throne as the ruler of one's life. Often, as I go about the day, I feel that the hislop person to whom I refer as me is like the insubstantial shadow which accompanies the real body as one walks on a sunny day. In his teachings, Baba declares it will work out best for us if we feel that God is the reality and that one is but an instrument used by God to carry out his design. Our reason can accept this, for there is no way it can be challenged by the limited mind with which we have day-to-day familiarity. If the position strikes us as being reasonable, it will do away with mountains of anxiety and will add much enthusiasm to the way we carry out action. For myself, my mind, by now, constantly recites the sacred name. For me, it is Om Sai Ram. And when things happen as they do, I say and feel, Thy will, Lord. I act with my maximum energy and according to my duty as duty becomes apparent, and say and feel, Thy will, Lord, and I accept the consequence of action without worry, feeling and saying, Thy will, Lord. If I happen to forget this base, this viewpoint, I recollect and again take this position. This ends the reading of the book, My Baba and I, by Dr. John S. Hislop. Thank you.